We're now going to look at polio, oral polio vaccination conducted in Africa. Our next speaker, known in the Pan-African world as Kahura Nakuba, which means one who handcuffs lightning and puts thunder in jail, is founder of Greater African Radio and president of the East African World Broadcasters Association and director of the Pan-African Center for Strategic and International Studies. Several years ago, he began hearing from villagers who were being subjected to repeated forced live oral polio vaccination despite reports of injuries and deaths among the children. On his radio program, he began to speak out and questioned the safety of giving the children, especially children with HIV, so many live oral polio vaccinations rather than giving them the safer killed polio vaccine used in the U.S. and Canada. Since that time, he tells me, he has been persecuted by the government, World Health Organization, and UNICEF, and his radio station has been driven into bankruptcy. Kahura is appearing here at great personal and professional risk to tell his story. It is my great honor and privilege to introduce you to the recipient of NBIC's Humanitarian Award, my good friend and colleague, Kahura Nakuba.
I'm indeed very honored to be here and to have been invited by Barbara Fisher and Kathy Williams to come and tell my story, which is also my people's story. Normally when they ask you to come and speak, you sit there and think of what's the first word that you'd say. But in listening to my brother Sonny Bates and Karen Foschner and Stanley Copes, I felt a cheer, and I was saying, my God, if we could do this here in one of the most powerful countries on earth, what will happen to me? What will happen to us? If they can do that in the United States, then you know, when it comes to other countries like Africa and Asia and South America, our chances are pretty slim. I did not start off as being a campaigner for the other people's rights and polio. I am a Pan-Africanist, and by that I mean I believe in a quality of thought and practices that are rooted in the best image and interest of African people. I spent most of my time in England teaching film and television, and also running conferences, Pan-African conferences, for so many African people that live in the diaspora to mobilize them to go and do some work in Africa. And then eventually, I remember I was at a conference in Manchester, and somebody said to me, well, you keep telling us about helping Africa, and however much you theorize about swimming, one day you'll have to remove your clothes and jump into the water. Why don't you go to Africa yourself? And at that time, my wife and I decided to borrow money and raise some and go and set up a radio station. And we thought of a radio station because I believe that just one person with a microphone and a radio can teach more people than a professor in a good university. So I started Great Africa Radio in 1999, and unlike most radio stations that you find in Africa, we decided to broadcast in African languages and record African music and talk about issues that concern people, like growing food and storing grain and eating fruit and drinking clean water and sanitation and all the other issues that were really not trendy to most of the urban stations that broadcast music. And on this program, I run a program that they call African Metaphysics every night, and some people call it the Hour of Truth. It's a 1.5 hour program where I talk about, literally anything that I wish. And it became so popular that people started organizing in theaters, in assembly halls, in churches and mosques, and they'd pay to come and have me go and speak there. So it was in one of these lectures that I gave in one small town that, and normally before I go, because there is so much interest in my lectures, there is like minders and people who do crowd control, and they hide me somewhere, and they introduce me last minute so that people don't see me before they've paid. Now, now when I was in one of those hideouts, I sat with a preacher who started telling me a story of 1997 during the National Immunization Days. In 1996, the government of Uganda introduced what they call National Immunization Days. For those of you who don't know Uganda, Uganda is in East Africa. It's at the foothills of the mountains of the moon, just where River Nile begins, and according to paleontology, archaeology, molecular biology, it is one of the countries that is said to be the source of humanity, because now I think everybody agrees that humanity, from the stage of Australopithecines to Homo sapiens sapiens, started in Africa, according to UNESCO anyway. So, and it is governed as a democracy, quote-unquote. Not that it's not as a democracy like you've got here. It's just, I'm always very skeptical when I hear the word democracy mentioned. So they have a parliament. They have a president that is elected by, all those that can vote. And then they have a parliament. And in the northern part of Uganda, just in one district, there is some trouble, by people who think that they should have been president and not the guy who is in charge. So I was told by this preacher that when the government introduced the National Immunization Days in 1997, that most of the children after vaccination started dying. And the preacher told me that they had so much death that his cassock that he wears to go and conduct a burial ceremony got old. He said, "I buried children and my cassock got old." In the same room, there was one mother who had four children, and she hid one and took three other children for vaccination. And three children died, and that one survived. Now, when I went to do my presentation, and I asked most of the people that were there, about 2,000-3,000 people, each person had the same story. Now, in 1992, I believed that vaccination was a good thing. I didn't know very much about vaccination, like most people.
Please stop the tape at this point. Turn over your cassette.
And I thought, because the doctors must really know, what they're doing. So I thought the vaccination was a good thing. But I had an argument with my wife, who didn't want, my son to receive vaccination. So I started reading about polio. And I think I knew at that time that there was difficulties with the oral polio vaccine, which I call a polio Sabine. So in this at this lecture, I said, "I hope it's not the polio Sabine." And that was just the one remark I made. I said, "I hope it's not polio Sabine." Now, all my lectures are broadcast every evening, so I'd go before a crowd, I'd give a lecture, and then they'd broadcast it on radio at night. And the following day, the government sent people to me to ask me about my remark, as what I meant by, "I hope they are not using the polio Sabine." I didn't know that that was the polio vaccination they were using in the country, because I think I had read from literature from the National Vaccine Information Center, the Consumer Guide, which must be one of the most well-read book in Uganda, because everybody wanted a copy of it, including the government the health officials from the government. So they came to me and they asked me, they said, what did you mean by you hope it's not Porio Sabin? I said, well, I hope it's not Porio Sabin because according to the information I have, it was stopped in America in 1996 because it was a cause of polio in America. And they said, really? I said, there's no polio in America. I said, yeah. The health officials told me they weren't vaccinating in America. And I said, no, that's not true. I know they vaccinate in America. They said, no, because they eliminated wild polio over there. I said, what do you mean wild polio? They said, well, there's two types of polio. One is wild and one, I suppose, is domestic. So... So I said, okay, out of these two polios, which one are you trying to eliminate in this country? They said, well, we're trying to eliminate the wild polio, and then so you can have the domestic polio, because the domestic polio can be controlled. And I said, well, why don't you leave the wild polio in the bush? Why do you have to bring it? Why do you have to go and fight wild polio to introduce it in the house? At least if it's out there, then you know. At least it's not threatening inside the house. But anyway, very soon after that, articles started appearing in the newspapers about myself, and they claimed that I was not really interested in my people, in African people, and that to demonstrate that I had married a white wife, that I had all my children locked up in England and they had been vaccinated. And I had stopped them coming to Africa because they would get, because if they came to Africa, they'd, you know, probably pick up some disease. Now, all this was unfortunate for them because at the time my wife was in Africa and my children. And, with all due respect, my wife was not white, but they tried to show that really I hated people so much that I couldn't even marry somebody from them. Now, then, at that time, the Parliament of Uganda and the Parliament of Uganda, the Minister of Information, the Minister in charge of Presidency, started writing to the Attorney General to close the radio station because I was broadcasting anti-government messages. And they sent the civil intelligence to come and interrogate me. At that time, they were saying it wasn't really polio they were interested in. It was that I had anti-government views, and I was plotting to overthrow the government. Fortunately, the intelligence officer that came to interrogate me proved to be very intelligent when I told him that really the polio they were using in Uganda was discontinued in America because it was the sole cause of polio. And... according to the information that I had, there was really no polio in Uganda. There had been no polio. I grew up to be 25. I didn't see anybody with polio. I started seeing polio when I went to the city, where polio vaccination had taken place. And the more they challenged me, the more I started digging about polio, to educate myself and stand ready for to go to court or to be charged. And then what the intelligence officer recommended to government was that, they bring health officials to debate me at the radio station so that if I was telling lies, then they should come and expose me before my very audience. To this, the Ministry of Health, which was backed by UNICEF and the United States Agency for International Development and the World Health Organization, said that really it shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't debate polio because I'm not a scientist. Now, I have been a broadcaster for more than 14 years, and all I was saying was not that people should not go for vaccination, was that if they are to go for vaccination, if there is a vaccine that is deemed to be safe, then that's what they should use. And then, by a stroke of good luck, somebody brought me an insert that comes with the manufacturer, comes with the polio vaccine. And it was from Pasteur Melanieu, I think a French company that manufactured the polio vaccine. And that was the one that was used in 1997, when children started dying in large numbers. And when I looked at the contraindications, it stated that inactivated polio vaccine and not oral polio vaccine should be used in situations where families had HIV, where there was a history of HIV in the family. And when I got this information, I was really shocked because since 1984, Uganda has had a very difficult HIV and AIDS problem. In fact, it says that if a child is inadvertently given the oral polio vaccine, that child should be quarantined for 4 to 7 weeks because oral polio vaccine is live and they keep shedding it between that period and they could contaminate other people. So I was saying, you know, here is the manufacturer who is writing for anybody who could read English that please do not give this oral polio vaccine to population that have HIV. And here is the Ministry of Health, which in its own wisdom says this has to be used here. So armed with this insert from the manufacturer, I decided to install wireless internet in the radio station and also to see what other people were saying. At that time, one of the main advisors to the government of Uganda was the Center for Disease Control, one of the most respected agencies in the world. So I tried to see what the Center for Disease Control was saying about this oral polio vaccine, which should not be used according to the manufacturer. And the Center for Disease Control was even more clearer than the manufacturer. In fact, this is what it says. It says that persons who have congenitally acquired immune deficiency disease, AG combined immune deficiency, blah, blah, persons should not be given oral polio vaccine because of their substantially increased risk for vaccine-associated disease. Now, they continue. They say, inactivated polio vaccine and not oral polio vaccine should be used to vaccinate immunodeficient persons and their household contacts. So, I said, if this is the Center for Disease Control, which is advising the government of Uganda, and it is saying we should not use oral polio vaccine, and here is a manufacturer saying oral polio vaccine should not be used. Now, why should oral polio vaccine be used here? And then at the time, because of the heightened tension that the Minister of Health was bringing to bear on the radio station, then other people started throwing their own questions. And they went like this. In Africa, oral polio does not kill anybody. And they say it's very rare to catch. It's really very rare to get paralytic polio. They say it's in very rare circumstances. So, what is it that is killing people in Africa? Malaria. Every 5 seconds, a child is dying of malaria in Africa. Now, to get a dose of life-saving anti-malaria is about $5. But there is no government to give anti-malaria. When somebody gets malaria, if they have no money, they get ill and die. So, the question that I was asking and many people were asking was, if you really want to help children, why begin with a disease that they don't have? Why not go? Why not look for something that is killing them and save them from what is killing them? And then afterwards you can say, I like you very much. I saved your children from this killer disease. Now there are no other disease apart from this rare polio. So let's go and fight that as well. But you don't begin with the rarest of the disease and spend all the government's meager resources fighting polio, which is not a threat to most people, and then ignore something that is killing them in large numbers, like malaria, like AIDS, like cholera, issues to do with sanitation, stunted growth, all the main things that mattered to people the government was not fighting. So, what they decided to do was to appeal to the president and say, the president says to them, What he could do is go and take him to court. If the court decides that he's giving false information, then charge him with sedition, and which carries a death sentence or a life sentence. So when they told me this, I said, well, if I am to die, I think there is an American poet called McCain, and he had a poem which was, If I Am to Die. So if I was to die, I did not want to take anybody with me, but I really had to give people a run for their money. So I decided to use the experience that I had gained in broadcasting and research for over 14 years to research everything that I could find out about polio, to prepare myself for the ultimate challenge if I was to go to court. I discovered that really the whole concept of vaccination is like getting a disease, putting it in an undiseased person to cure a disease that person hasn't got. You know, it's like if you have an army and it's fighting an enemy, and then you bring the enemy into the barracks just to see if the soldiers can defend themselves should an enemy, you know, surprise them. You know, I mean, you don't do such a thing in a war. So I started asking myself, I mean, humanity has lived in Africa for 5.5 million years, from the stage of Australopithecine to Homo sapiens sapiens. Polio vaccination in Uganda started in 1963. So if we were all to die of polio, like the Minister of Health was telling us, we would have died by 1963, and it would be case closed. There would be nobody to vaccinate. Yeah. So the fact that we had survived 5.5 million years without polio vaccination shows that people can survive without it. And if really somebody is that desperate for the vaccine, then let's look for a vaccine that, you know, somebody says this is safer than the other. Because the manufacturer, who should know more than the Minister of Health that we have, or the World Health Organization, says, do not use this in this country. Now, when they wrote to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General asked me to come and do a presentation, and I went to the Attorney General and gave him my views of what I thought of inactivated polio vaccine, and basically my case was simple. This oral polio vaccine was discontinued in America. Why? Because it's the cause of polio. And you telling me that the Minister of Health here wants to do what? To stop polio. You don't stop polio by bringing something that causes polio and giving it to people. You stop polio by bringing something that will prevent it. That was my first argument. The second argument was the manufacturer says, don't use it. And since the Minister of Health and myself are not manufacturers, we have to wait for that time when a manufacturer says, use it. And the Attorney General says, okay, I don't think you can be prosecuted. And he wrote to the Minister of Health and the Ministry of Information and says, I think you have a weak case. If you took this person to court, you'd probably lose. So what they decided to do then was to use what they call the Broadcast Council. And the Broadcast Council is the one that gives licenses, you know, for broadcasters. So you couldn't broadcast without the Broadcast Council. I have to say that at that time, every government minister, every member of parliament was talking ill about the radio station as how we are misleading the public, giving false information. Really, they were calling me a child killer and everything. And most of my advertisers completely fled. Because in Uganda, 80% of the advertisers is the government anyway. And the government was not going to advertise with the radio station that was giving it that trouble. So the Broadcast Council then wrote to me saying that I was giving information that was deemed to be anti-government and anti-people, and they were going to withdraw the licenses. In fact, to back their words up, the Minister of Information came to the council hall where the radio is based, with soldiers and the police and, you know, local councillors and district medical officers, and they called me And he had a pen in his hand, and he says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go on radio tonight on your popular program and tell people that polio sabine is safe, that they can have it, and that you support it. If you don't do this, I'm going to sign recommending that your radio station be closed, and by tomorrow you won't be on air. I looked at the handsome Minister of Health, Minister of Information in the face, and I said, go to heaven and stay there, because I was not going to do such a thing. I was not going to do such a thing. I did not believe that the oral polio vaccine was safe, and I was not going to tell anybody to mislead the public that it was. So when he left, I expected the radio station to be closed, and what I did is I went off air. I stopped broadcasting my program voluntarily, so I stopped broadcasting. So what happened was really a revolution, because people waited for my program, it didn't come, and what they did, they decided to come to the radio station and mount a vigil, and before long I had over 10,000 people at the radio station. Taxi drivers threatening to block the road. I had riots in almost every town demanding that my program come back on air. And at that time, information had gone that the government was really raining down on me because of oral polio vaccine. And that's what upset people. They said, what's in polio that you really want to give to us? When we want clothes, you can't give us clothes. When we want education, you can't give us education. When we get ill, when our children die, you can't give us coffins or even anything. Come and assist us. Why are you forcing polio on us? Why is it so good? If it's so good, why can't we see the benefit of it? You know, because it was our children dying. And then they started narrating all these stories. It emerged that the main hospital in Mbarara, during that month of 1977, more than 600 children had died following polio vaccination. 600 children. So, even some of the timid medical practitioners who were initially afraid to come out started coming out giving information and saying, oh, we knew this oral polio vaccine was trouble. Because as soon as the child receives it, they get a temperature and their health goes down here and there's nothing that you could do. So the mothers said they would not take their children for oral polio vaccination. And this information was going back to the government at the capital. So what the government decided to do was to say, let's send a team of experts to come and debate me at the radio on my program. I have to tell you that on that day, it was in the month of July, I think July 22nd, some date like that, all the towns sold out of radios and mobile phones because they were ready to ring inside the radio station and tell the doctors that really it should be their choice to decide what is given to their children, and it shouldn't be the choice of the doctors. And that whether they agree... And that whether they agreed with me or not, that both sides should present their information to the parents so that the parents can make a choice. Now, I thought that these doctors were going to come with thousands of books and evidence and references, and I spent 2 weeks preparing myself. I ordered for books from Australia and Britain, and Barbara sent me some literature. And I didn't sleep for almost a week. I was reading day and night, trying to educate myself about immunity, how the body's immunity works. I was trying to sleep viruses, jumping species, and immunosuppressive treatments. And I learned about, for example, the Marburg virus, which appeared in Germany in 1967 at Baring Pharmaceutical Laboratory. That they were developing polio vaccine, oral polio vaccine, and actually the monkeys had come from Uganda. So the monkey viruses had jumped which some of the viruses that lie dormant in some of these species for a long time, if you take these viruses and put them in the human body, they could do anything. And one of the things they did was to give Marburg, which is a cousin to Ebola. In fact, after reading that information, I predicted that there would be Ebola in Uganda because of these immunization of these vaccinations. And there was Ebola in Uganda a year after. So they started saying I was a prophet. Now, so when they came, here am I in the studio thinking, God, now these are the real experts. How am I going to handle it? I'm just a broadcaster, somebody who asks questions that any right-thinking member of the society should ask. Now they came, they were more scared than I was. Yeah? And they started saying, you know, we really apologize because the leader of the team, the district medical officer, says, you know what, I have never read even a medical journal since I left medical school. We have no internet. I can't afford to buy new books. How would I know what is safe or what is not? All I know is that World Health Organization says it's safe, UNICEF says it's safe, and all these other agencies say it's safe. So if it is safe, then we must use it. And then my first question was, well, why didn't World Health Organization say it was safe for America to use? Doesn't the jurisdiction of World Health Organization extend to America? Or doesn't the jurisdiction of UNICEF extend to America? If they stopped it in America, why should we use it here? And people were saying to them, okay, you are the physicians. Do you study the same thing with the physician that manufactured this vaccine? And I said, yeah. You know, when you're a physician, you don't want to say, no, I didn't study that. I'm sorry, I went to school, but I didn't study what he studied. They said, yeah, we did. You know, we studied exactly the same thing. They said, well, okay, why do we have to import the vaccine anyway? Why can't we use the vaccine here? Why can't we manufacture the vaccine here if you know what goes in it? They said, oh, that's a problem. You know, we don't have factories. And then people would were ringing into the studio asking, we had our own way of ensuring our children's immunity. You know, when a child was born, there was an assortment of herbs that were collected from the wild, and then they were boiled, and every day the child would bathe in these herbs for 6 months, and a little bit of the herbs would be given to the child to drink. And it was in this debate that most of the physicians admitted that method was as effective as immunization that was being carried out. So people were saying, well, if we have this method that had proved very good for us for all this time, why are you giving us oral polio? And why are you not fighting the diseases that affect us? And most significantly, where are all these so-called paralyzed people or people that are physically challenged that you said existed in villages? And at that time, we had marshaled people that had contracted polio after immunization. And they were in the studio with us. On that debate, most of the people that had come to debate us ran out of the studio and they could not answer the questions from the people. And the national newspapers splashed these headlines, so even other parts of the country where my radio station was not reaching started picking up the story. The World Health Organization got worried. UNICEF got worried. UNICEF representatives came to the station to appeal to me to say, well, we know you have a case, but you see, you're giving it to the wrong audience. These people, they don't understand what you're saying. If you're talking to people in cities, you know, people in villages, they cannot understand the argument. Polio is good. It may have some difficulties, but why don't you come and join us? Then we'll support you, give you more advertising. And I didn't think that it was an advertising issue. I thought it was a moral issue at the time. But just for them to prove their case, one time I'm leaving Mbarara, which is where my radio station was based, and I'm going to Kampala, 250 miles away. And in my driving mirror, I see two pickup trucks following me. And they must have followed me for about, 100 miles. I noticed it because the two people that were driving were white. And there aren't a lot of white people in that region. So when I saw them following me, and I'd stop, and they'd slow down, and they'd overtake me, and And then when I went back on the road, I'd see them again. I said, I thought I was in trouble. So I reached the next town. I, you know, turned off my engine and waited for about 2 hours. And I thought, I must have lost them. So I jumped on the road again. I am driving full speed, about maybe 120 miles an hour, because I'm late. I was going to pick my son from the airport. And I had already lost 2 hours trying to avoid people who are following me. And lo and behold, one of the pickup trucks is in my driving mirror again. And I'm going down here, and this guy comes and overtakes me, gets in front of me, and brakes. He had a big pickup truck, and behind there were bull bars. And the other pickup that is behind me is also very close to my bumper. So I try to avoid by going off, trying to go on the right side of the road. In Uganda, they drive on the left. And he also goes on the right side of the road. When I attempt to come back into the road, my vehicle starts overturning, and I must have overturned about 15 times. The vehicle was totally mashed up. And it was near a small town. Everybody thought, you know, nobody could escape from that car. I thought I had died. I was still breathing. I could, you know, hear myself breathing, but I thought I had died. I looked at the mashed cars and the smashed windows, and I thought maybe heaven looks this ugly, you know. So, eventually, you know, people came and they cut the door, and I had them waited to see if, because when it overturned, it passed, it knocked somebody who was on a bicycle, but the person didn't die, and it knocked banana trees, and it was horrible. But I come out. When I stepped out, everybody started running. They thought it was a ghost walking. Then one of the, some kind of dead man walking. So one of the people recognized me, and they took me to hospital, and they found that I had just sustained very minor injuries. So I knew that, you know, they were going to make their point, and they were going to make it very well. But at that time, I think I had passed the door of no return, and I could not take a step backward. So the Minister of Health knew that if they lost the debate, it would be very difficult for them. Because when I in speaking to Barbara, I also understand that here you follow a certain regime, like you give, you know, certain doses and certain years, and then after that it's finished. In Uganda or Kenya or Tanzania, it's not like that. They have what they call routine, where, you know, children keep getting all these, you know, vaccines, and then they have national immunization days. It doesn't care whether you've gone through routine immunization or whether you are immunized last year, you'll come this year and they still give you the same thing. So, for polio, for measles, for, you know, there's no end. It's that complicated. So what happened then was the government then decided to say, well, those experts that came, they weren't really experts. You know, they're some kind of experts, but we have other experts. And these are the experts that are now going to come in the final debate on radio. And I said, okay, you know, the experts can come because my questions are still the same. So they brought now a team of other experts, which was supposed to be, you know, the final team of experts. And when they came, this was my first question. Tell us, you say that this oral polio virus is attenuated, which means weakened. What does that mean? And the guy says, well, it's not really a virus. It's a jacket of a virus. It's a live virus. It's an attenuated live virus. And, you know, the expert is saying, no, you know, it's not a live virus. It's a jacket of a virus. Then another one says, no. This is live on radio. So the experts from the Ministry of Health are contradicting themselves in a live debate, listened to by more than 15 million people, you know, who for a long time have trusted doctors as really people who should know everything about vaccines. One of them said, no, it's not a jacket. You can't say it's a jacket. It's fine. It's just harmless. Okay, well, if it's harmless and it goes into the body, if a virus goes into the body, definitely it can do several things. It can lie dormant, it can die, or it can become potent. And then people would ring in and say, okay, what would you call a virus in a local language? And one of the experts called it a small animal. And that's where problems started. because then another caller would ring in and say, well, if it's a small animal, what does it eat? If you don't give it food and it gets really hungry, what will happen? Won't it attack the body's immune system? Now, you may find this hilarious and laugh, but really, those are deep philosophical questions that scientists grapple with. You know, when a virus gets in your body, it can do several things. It can die, it can sleep, or it can, become potent or virulent. And if that happens, then you have a problem. So, this expert debate, it didn't do the work. Because what people were interested in was to hear why it is possible that they cannot get the killed virus. And the answer was, it would be too expensive. It would be too expensive to give the killed virus to the population. And then the people said, okay, if it's too expensive, we don't want the cheap one. We think at least we are worth $5 or $10 or something like this. So if you can't bring the inactivated polio virus, we are not going to have the oral polio. And that's what they did. But the government was ready for them. Not really the government, the Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization and the UNICEF. They mobilized the army, the police, moved from house to house. They had asked the local authorities to do a list of people who had children. So they moved from house to house, grabbing children at gunpoint and vaccinating them. Now, those that knew, as soon as the army got into the village, the rest of the people who had children would run into the bush and they stay there for a week. And there's a story of this child who was met on the road, and they grabbed him and asked him whether he was immunized. He said yes. He lied to them, said yes. He was running away, but he said yes. And they said, well, we still have to immunize you anyway. So they got the shots, they put it in the mouth, and the child spit it out, first time. They put it the second time, second time, fourth. And then they hit the child, and the child ran away, unvaccinated. So it became a very difficult exercise. And the government put all the blame on me. They said it must have been me who has learned all this hypnotherapeutic technique and, had marveled in psychocranial therapies, and I was an agent of, all these, organizations abroad that really do not believe in traditional medicine, and I had hypnotized the population so that they were not able to respond to government messages on vaccinations of something that was totally good for them. Now, the thing was, those that went for vaccination came immediately to report reactions, and a good many of them lost their children. Those that did not go for vaccination did not have the same reaction. So they would be ringing into the radio station and say, well, I vaccinated my child and this is what has happened. I know this was happening even before we started, but they had no way of expressing themselves. They had no means. So at this stage, most people really got convinced that there must be a relationship between having a history of HIV. I have to tell you, HIV is very big in Uganda. It's very big in East Africa. I was born in a family of 11. But from 1987 up to today, I have lost 8 members of my family through HIV. So when the manufacturer says, do not give this vaccine to families that have a history of HIV, there is no family in Uganda that has no history of HIV. Everybody knows somebody who's died or has lost an uncle or his brother's wife or his children, through HIV. And it's that relationship that people were able to put together, saying maybe really inactivate the oral polio vaccine when given to population that have HIV. When you get a live vaccine and give it to population that have HIV, it produces that reaction. But for me,
up to today, that is still the situation. The oral polio vaccine in Uganda, northern Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, a part of Kenya, has become a hotly contested debate. Thousands of people during the national immunization days in the month of July and September go into the bush and stay there for weeks. The army and the police move house to house looking for children to vaccinate. At the same time, things that kill children like malaria, cholera, issues to do with stunted growth, sanitation, are completely untackled. Now, last year I came to Washington to give a lecture to the Voice of America, and I decided to ring the Center for Disease Control. Normally when I travel, I record my travel, and I do a travel program, so I tell people what I'm seeing, because I know the majority of my people have no chance of traveling, so I describe the situation to them. And I rang the Center for Disease Control, and they have this line of experts that you can ask different questions, and I said, well, you know what, you know, I'm living in America, and I want to go to Uganda, and my children have not received oral polio vaccination, and they said, no, they can't receive oral polio vaccination in this country. I said, why not? They said, well, you can get polio from oral polio vaccination. And I said, is this the Center for Disease Control? They said, yes. Are you sure you are not like the Center for Disease and Control or something? No, they said, no. We are the Center for Disease Control, the real McCoy. So I said, what about if I've had a history of HIV and, you know, and I receive oral polio? They said, well, that would be really pretty dangerous. It could be a death sentence. I said, what did he say? It could be pretty dangerous. I said, can I have your name? He said, no, you can't have my name. You can have the reference number. I said, okay. But I recorded this. And when I went back, I played it on radio. I said, well, this is not me. Now, you can't arrest me. You have to arrest the Center for Disease Control. Because, I mean, it's them doing the talking. It's not me. I have just given them space on the radio. So the Minister of Health said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do a deal. We're going to invite you, and you'll come and sit with all the experts from World Health Organization, from UNICEF, and the Minister of Health, and we'll do a deal. So what I did is I went to the website of the Center for Disease Control. I photocopied a big document on vaccine reactions, and I took it with me. So I sat before the Minister of Health, and I said, well, see, before we could do any deal, I just want to see what our very good friends from the Center for Disease Control say about vaccine reactions, particularly polio. And the Minister gave it to the head of public health. The head of public health looks at this document and says, this is not a genuine CDC document. It's from the internet. And I said, so what? You know, it's from the internet. You know, the CDC is on the internet. This is the 21st century, you know. They said, no, it's not. I said, okay, at the bottom, there's a number. And it says, you can ring this number. Why don't we ring the Center for Disease Control? Here's a mobile phone. And they said, no, we can't ring them. We wouldn't know if it was the Center for Disease Control answering. So what do we do? They said, we'll ring the embassy. We'll send the document to the embassy, and we'll ask the embassy to verify whether it's a Center for Disease Control document. Oh. I said, well, you've got an expert from the Center for Disease Control in Kampala. Why don't you call that expert to verify? They said, no, he's sick. You know, he's not available for verification. So I said, okay, I'll do a deal with you only after you've verified that this is a genuine Center for Disease Control document. We'll give each other 24 hours. You go and do your verification, and then after that, I'll come and we could deal. 24 hours, no reaction. 1 week, 1 month, I'm still waiting. But in the meantime, I had two radio stations. One of them is now closed. I employed over 60 people. They're 6 months in arrears. I can't afford to pay them. Or, as I speak, I have not a single advertiser on my radio station that has an audience of more than 15 million. My radio program when it goes on air, even buses that carry people stop to listen to my program for 1.5 hours. And I've already told you that people even pay to hear me speak. But I had taken a bank loan from England and a local bank loan. My house is up for grabs, including all my books and my videos and everything, just for asking simple questions as, why don't you fight a disease that kills people instead of one that has a theoretical risk of attacking them? Why don't you deal with issues that people want you to deal with? And maybe after you have dealt with that, then you could deal with oral polio vaccine. Why use a vaccine that was discontinued in America, which is a technological nation where people should know, and you use it here? Why at least can't you say to people, pay for the killed vaccine so that they get the vaccine that according to the manufacturer would be less harmless? That is my story. I am not opposed to vaccination. I have not gone out to cause trouble for anybody. It's just I felt as a broadcaster, my job is to ask questions that my audiences would have asked had they been in the same position that I was or had the opportunity to meet the people that matter. So, and that's what I did. Instead of giving me appropriate answers, I was victimized. I was, one government minister said they had, the experts from the Ministry of Health had carried out a study and had found they had satisfied me mad. And I said, well, if you say I'm mad, I think mad is, you could say it's a mutually assured destruction. And definitely this policy will mutually assure us of destruction. In my own madness, it seemed I was the only person that could stand in front of millions of people to ask legitimate questions. I know one thing, that people who have lost their children as a result of taking oral polio vaccine will not be going for immunization unless that policy is changed. I also know, I think if you go to the website of World Health Organization, you'll find my name, and they depict me as this anti-polio campaigner and whatever, which I am not. But I also know that the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and all these agencies are really looking for what they call victory, to vaccinate the last child. And they are saying that right now the person who stands in front of them is myself. For more than 6 months, I have not been on radio broadcasting because I was involved in a conflict in Eastern Congo. You've heard of the war that was in Eastern Congo, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and it was the center that I run called the Pan-African Center for Strategic and International Studies that began the peace initiative about a year ago that led to different peace accords that have been signed to bring peace in this country. And one of the peace conferences was chaired by myself for more than 6 months. Now, I also know that the population is not going to accept this oral polio vaccination unless they change to killed vaccine. But for government and for the Ministry of Health and all the other agencies, they'll continue to look at me as the enemy. I have been out of radio for this period of time, but still there is very little people going for vaccination. And the government is pouring in more money, millions and millions of dollars of meager resources that a small country like Uganda cannot afford. And most of that is really going into misinformation, a campaign against me. That's my point.